This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Tuesday, July 21st, 2020. I'm Caleb Brown. The federal incursion into Portland, Oregon, nominally to protect federal monuments, looks an awful lot like an attempt at suppressing protest, according to Cato's Patrick Eddington. He argues many long-standing federal powers, combined with recently granted authorities, should concern anyone who wants to protect the rights of individuals to speak their minds in public. You and I have spoken about this many times, and before you, I spoke about this with Adam Bates when he was at Cato. I spoke about this with David Ritgers when he was at the Cato Institute, and this is this mishmash of federal authorities, some of which exist nationwide, some of which exist within a what is not in statute anywhere, but has been sort of presumed to be a 100-mile band into the continental United States. That is just if you took a highlighter around the edges of the map of the United States, you could get it. And CBP has been the agency that we most associate these authorities with, which is to engage in the kinds of searches and seizures that we do not normally associate with a free country. So what is going on in Portland right now?
So what we know at this stage of the game comes in no small part from some of the work that Ken Klippenstein at The Nation has been doing. And he actually got his hands on an internal DHS memo that talks about what I would have to refer to essentially as counter-demonstration type operations being marketed under the guise of protecting American monuments. And in this circumstance, the particular memo in question is talking about the deployment of DHS personnel with CBP being in the lead here. Customs and Border Protection essentially is operating under a particular statute here, at least this is what they've been talking about publicly with the New York, as was quoted in the New York Times. And this is from the U.S. Code, 40 U.S. Code, Section 1315, law enforcement authority of the Secretary of Homeland Security for protection of public property. So that goes all the way back at least to the 2002 timeframe. So this has been on the books for a long time. It has never actually been utilized in the way that we are seeing here in Portland. And normally what we see with respect to CBP, whether we're talking about at fixed checkpoints, fixed entry points into the country, or some of these roving checkpoints that they can set up, that's normally an immigration-related, or at least that's how they bill it, as an immigration-related action. Here, we simply have them operating on the streets of a United States city, allegedly out to protect American monuments. The one individual that we know for a fact was nabbed off the street, Mark Pettibone, wasn't doing anything having to do with a U.S. monument on federal property, so far as I'm aware. And he was stuffed into what may have been a rental van operated by unmarked federal agents, CBP is what we believe at this point, and taken to the federal courthouse where he was interrogated without counsel. He wisely refused to answer questions and was then subsequently released without any kind of charges being filed. Now, I don't know where you and I are from. I think most people would call that kidnapping. And I think this is why I've been so kind of amazed, alarmed, appalled at the lack of response by Governor Kate Brown of Oregon. I mean, she went on Chris Hayes' show on MSNBC, I guess it was on Friday night, and declared it unacceptable and made all kinds of, you know, wonderful rhetorical statements about this. When she should have been ordering Oregon Public Utilities to shut down water and electricity flowing to any CBP facility in her state. That's what she should have been doing, among other things.
So to the extent that we understand how police may remove someone from the streets, we understand that they need to identify themselves. We understand that people who are placed under arrest retain certain rights to communicate with the outside world, to assert their ability to have a lawyer present for questioning. It seems that perhaps asking for a lawyer was the trigger here, if I understand you correctly, to say, yeah, we're kind of in uncharted waters here. We probably ought to cut this guy loose.
And I think it probably did have that effect. The problem, of course, is that these agents should not even be on the ground in Portland, Oregon, or any other American city, for that matter, where these protests that took place in the wake of Mr. Floyd's murder back in May have been taking place. This is just, it has for me the feel, this incident with Mr. Pettibone really does have the feel of Argentina or Chile in the 1970s with the disappearances that took place. The only thing lacking was, you know, Mr. Pettibone being murdered by those agents. And fortunately, that did not happen. But we know that CBP has a reputation for radical, reckless, excessive use of force, including the murder of individuals. And that's just another reason to be very concerned here. You know, there is no legitimate reason. This entire thing that the president is engaged in with this so-called monuments executive order protection, this is being done essentially to try to suppress protest in this country. That's exactly what's going on here. It has nothing to actually do with protecting monuments. Look, people go out sometimes and they graffiti and they do things of that nature. That's juvenile delinquency. That's a level of hooliganism. It does not rise to the level of any kind of insurrection, if you will. And that's why I think it's clear to most people, I believe, that what the president is doing here is just trying to distract. And in the course of doing that, he's taking enormous power, putting it in the hands of Chad Wolf at DHS and letting them run amok in Portland. And I just worry that this is a test case, that they're looking to see whether or not, okay, if we can get away with it in Portland, can we get away with it in DC? Can we get away with it in Chicago? And so on and so forth. And that's, I think, what we really have to be watching as this week begins to unfold.
So with specific respect to this band within the United States, this so-called 100 miles, because it's not written down anywhere, the somewhat interior of the United States, but close to water or another country. What do we understand CBP's authority to be, or what does CBP understand their authority to be?
Well, they base all of this on a 1976 Supreme Court decision, U.S. versus Martinez Fuerte, in which the court ruled in error, in my judgment, and I think in the judgment of most who've looked at the case, that CBP has the authority to set up these internal checkpoints in order to essentially run immigration enforcement operations, determining whether or not someone is actually supposed to be in this country. And over the course of the last 40 plus years, these checkpoints have morphed into generalized crime control checkpoints. Most of the time when you see press releases coming out of DHS about CBP ops at these checkpoints, it's about drug bust, and it's usually about marijuana bust, right? And GAO did a study a couple of years back in which they found that over 40% of these stops that are made within 20 miles of the U.S. border and these checkpoints involve a dime bag of marijuana, right? That's about all they are. So that's the authority that I think most people are most commonly referring to when we talk about CBP. What's going on here is being conducted directly under this executive order that the president issued just in the last couple of weeks, having to do with the alleged protection of monuments. And as I indicated, I think that's just strictly a cover to engage in counter-protest and those kinds of operations.
So going forward, you argued that the governor of Oregon should have taken specific steps to throw some hurdles up to federal agencies. The question, when I heard about this story and just the sort of the general tenor of what's going on in Portland, my thought was, well, to what extent is it acceptable for federal police to just act freely within states?
As a general rule, whenever federal agents, and this is particularly true with respect to the Department of Justice, and I'm thinking specifically here about the FBI, but it would apply to DEA and ATF as well. They clearly have the ability under existing federal statutes to go after the kinds of crimes for which they are charged with investigating and pursuing. So, you know, kidnapping, white slavery, other kinds of white collar crime, things of that nature, in the case of the FBI, for example, espionage, all of that would kind of fall into an established rubric. What we have here under this executive order that Trump signed is the Department of Homeland Security, whose agents do not operate under the same kinds of overall guidelines as the Department of Justice components do, out here engaging in what can only be described as counter-protest operations, operations that are designed to try to suppress dissent. There is no actual criminal act that they have cited, either for Mr. Pettibone or anybody else so far. And I think this is just literally a power grab on the part of DHS that is being enabled and is being utilized by Trump in order to, again, change the conversation away from his lousy poll numbers now and the ongoing disaster of the COVID-19 pandemic. I think my biggest fear is Governor Brown letting this situation get out of control from the get-go, because she was told on Tuesday when Chad Wolf of DHS called and said, hey, we're going to be doing this, that was her moment to tell him, no, you're not. If you're going to try to send your agents here, I'm going to have Oregon National Guard on the street to make sure that they don't do anything. I'm going to tell the state police and direct all local law enforcement to not cooperate with you in any way, shape, or form. It's those kinds of pushback measures, had they been put on the table immediately and implemented before any of these CBP personnel got on the ground, might have prevented this from going anywhere.
So if you're a Governor Larry Hogan, or you're a Governor Andy Beshear, or a governor of some other state where these protests are ongoing, careful listeners will know that I'm from Louisville, Kentucky, which is home of many weeks, a month and a half of protests over the death of Breonna Taylor. What do you tell these governors if the feds come knocking and saying, hey, we're going to do something similar here, if indeed this is, in Oregon, a test case?
Mm-hmm. I think if I were a governor, I would already have basically told the president and DHS secretary, don't even think about it. Don't even think about trying to send agents here to roust our people off the streets and so on and so forth. If we have a problem in a particular state where, you know, we get to levels of street violence and chaos, let's say on the scale that we saw in Chicago at the Democratic National Convention in 1968, might that be a circumstance where some level of federal intervention might actually be necessary or appropriate? Possibly. But most of these protests, as we have seen over the last 3 months nationwide, have been overwhelmingly peaceful. These are people who have got real grievances. These are murders and police tactics that have been used against people of color for 100 plus years. And until that's addressed, until we have fundamental police reform, very fundamental changes in how we approach policing, we're going to continue to see these protests. And as long as they, you know, stay in the lane and are peaceful and are trying to, you know, work the system and make the system respond to them as it should be responding to them, then DHS and all of its elements need to go and do what they're supposed to be doing, not trying to drag American protesters off the street when they're exercising their First Amendment rights.
Patrick Eddington is a research fellow in Homeland Security and Civil Liberties at the Cato Institute. Subscribe to the Cato Daily Podcast wherever you please and follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.